the last thing I said. So I pulled in the place to park was to pick it up, and then I forgot to do it. Let me say, since we've got the machine on, that I'm Bill Moy, and I'm talking Mr. J. Carlton Fleming in his office in Charlotte on the 18th of August, 1975. I appreciate you allowing me the time. Let me say just a bit about what I'm doing. I am writing a dissertation in history for Chapel Hill, sort of on Charlotte politics, economics too, to some extent, culminating primarily with the consolidation attempt in 1971. I have read some of both the Observer and the News, and I've talked to a few other people. So I have sort of an idea. There's still sort of some questions that I have. You, I believe, were involved in the, at 1963 or 64, I believe, a committee of the Chamber of Commerce to study the possibility of some form of...
That's right. There was a chamber committee at that time, and I guess that was not the first. There's probably some antecedent history before that, Bill, but that particular committee looked at other efforts in other places around the country. Durham was one, for example, which had had an abortive attempt at consolidation. Dr. Rankin, whom you may know over in the political science department at Duke, was very heavily involved in that effort. I may be a little confused on chronology here, but it seems to me that we looked at efforts in some other places that at that point perhaps had been unsuccessful but later became successful.
Probably in Nashville.
Yeah, we've been in and out of this question at different points in the last 10 or 12 years, and as I remember, when we looked at it in roughly around the 63 or 64 period, we gave some consideration to what the status of the effort was in Jacksonville and in Nashville, as well as the results that had been somewhat disheartening up in Durham. I guess our conclusion there was, and you probably find this documented over in the chamber files, was that consolidation was a worthwhile goal, that there were two ways to consider it. One was functional consolidation and another political consolidation, that the community seemed to have a good start on functional consolidation as it was, that probably the most important thing to consolidate politically or functionally was the school system, which had already been consolidated here for some years. And some other things either were on the verge of consolidation or perhaps had been consolidated, like the city-county tax office, for example, and some other functions that really were subject to a relatively easy merger, and that therefore there was really no tremendous impetus to an attempt right at that time, that is, right at 63 and 64, if that's when it was, and I have no independent recollection of the years, but that perhaps the wisdom, the better wisdom dictated continuing efforts to functionally consolidate, to functionally consolidate, and one morning you'd wake up and you'd be so close to it that to take the final steps would be relatively easy for everybody to accept. And I guess that really is sort of the thesis of that particular study.
Then I guess in about 67 or 68, the chamber makes consolidation perhaps part of its program of work, and then there's the Martin Committee, and then the Griffith Committee, and then legislation, and the Charter Commission.
Right.
Why did it happen to come up at that time? Was there, there had been some functional consolidation in the meantime with the health department and some attempt at cooperation with the police, mm-hmm. and the water sewer situation was somewhat coming to a head at that time.
Right.
Was there a particular stimulus that, or was it, as you said, maybe you're sort of in the process of waking up and deciding that maybe this was the logical?
I don't know that there was any particular impetus to put it at that time rather than earlier or later, except that that was just a time when the individuals who were particularly interested in the subject seemed to coalesce, I suppose you'd say, and say, well, now let's get on with it. This is a thing we ought to do. Let's move forward with it. I think it was really more a result of specific persons who had specific ideas deciding that they'd like to have those ideas implemented, and it's just the fact that those people seemed to come together and arrive at that conclusion at that time. I don't think there was any particular magic to having tried it at that time rather than some other earlier or later time, really.
Who were some of those individuals, Mr. Lowe and Mr. Brookshaw?
Yeah, Lowe and Brookshire were, of course, very much involved. Stan Brookshire was a mayor at that time, and I guess Charlie Lowe was chairman of the Board of County Commissioners at that time. He's been chairman, been a commissioner. I was not sure whether he was chairman right at that time. I guess he was. They were moving forces in it. One of the strongest personalities involved was a sort of a quiet behind the scenes personality, but really was Charlie Crawford at the Chamber of Commerce. I'd say he probably had more to do with the notion that it ought to be done and the result that this became a prime chamber project, possibly than anybody else. In other words, I think he's had a great deal to do with the persuasion of people like Brookshire and Lowe and others.
I'm wondering now, from what I've read, the chamber was very important in establishing committees and getting the legislation passed and bringing the effort up. When, however, Brookshire and Lowe actually came to appointing members of the commission, it seems that maybe there's sort of two ways you can do this sort of thing. You can get sort of a, you might say, a house committee, a small committee of businessmen, or you can go and get representatives from all segments of the community. They chose to get representatives from all segments of the community. I'm having a little bit of trouble understanding why that choice was made. It seems that maybe they really wanted to get it passed. The more practical thing politically maybe to do was to have the small committee.
Well, I guess there are two ways to look at that. One is that if you get broad representation, maybe you get a lot of ultimate support because almost any element of the community can say, well, Joe Smith was on the Charter Commission and he would represent my views, and if he thinks it's all right, it's probably all right, and it's too complicated for me to understand anyhow. Mm-hmm. The other side of it, of that same proposition, I guess, is that if you have broad representation like that, perhaps you get some input, well, you do get some input, that's unquestionably true, that you wouldn't get if you had sort of a limited in number, establishment-oriented group to do it. Then, of course, in addition to the Charter Commission itself, there was that large group that was an advisory group that must have numbered what, you probably have the figure.
At least 50.
50 or 60 people. I was a member of that, incidentally, and attended a number of meetings and read into the late hours, many nights, the various drafts that came out with the assistance of the Institute of Government, particularly. I think the result was not so much the unfortunate result, if you want to characterize it as that, was not so much the product of the way the commission was put together as the drastic amount of change that the commission ultimately injected into the issue. A small establishment-oriented committee might have come up with not quite so many changes, perhaps, or changes that were not quite so drastic. They might well have come up with enough changes that the electorate would not have accepted it. But I sort of look at the final result and try to analyze what happened and why it happened. And I really think the reason that the issue went down to defeat at the polls was, like most election issues, there's usually no very simple answer. You just can't make a simplistic analysis, and I don't want to try to oversimplify it. I'm sure there were a number of votes that went for many, many different reasons against the proposed consolidation. But I think the one thing that really scuttled the whole effort was that there were just so many changes, and changes that were so drastic and in many instances so little understood that the typical voter said, well, that's just more than I can swallow. I could take a nibble, but they're just about to drown me in the complexity of this thing and upheaval of our entire governmental system, going to the system of election of the legislative body for the combined city and county, that it's just too much of a change for me to take, and I can't absorb it. A lot of blame has been laid in the press, particularly, to the fact that this was a vote against high taxes in the outlying district, and I'm sure to a certain extent that's true. I really think that's a subsidiary cause of what resulted. I think the overwhelming principal cause was that there were changes too many in number and too drastic in effect that the general electorate just would not accept. I think, for example, if we had 7 members of the city council and 5 members of the county commission, we had a mayor who didn't get a vote except in the case of tie. I think if we had just combine those, if we'd had a 12-man at-large election, which, see, basically speaking, that's no change at all. The only change you've made there is you have allowed people in the county to vote for the city councilman. You haven't changed anything as far as the 5 seats formerly held by the county commissioners were involved. I think if we had gone to that type of legislative arrangement, this issue may well have passed, particularly if there had been a satisfactory selling job on the question of the special taxing districts that would have been set up under the charter. In other words, really what I'm trying to say, Bill, is I think if we had kept the issue simple and had gone to the electorate and said, really what we're doing is no great change except that we're trying to give you better government, more efficient government, hopefully at somewhat less cost, although we can't guarantee tremendous savings, and we never did try to guarantee tremendous savings. They weren't there in the first place. But just to say to them, instead of having to go down, if you live in the city, as of course the bulk of the population of the county does anyhow, and having to mark 2 sets of ballots, one for the city council and one for the county commission, and elect 12 people, just elect all 12 on one ballot. And in the process, we're going to combine the city and county police force, we're going to combine the animal shelters, and things like that. And all that'll do is make for more efficient, better operation. I think there's a good chance that the effort may have been successful.
how did it get so far? I mean, it seems possibly to have been sort of a lack of communication, perhaps, between some of those who perhaps were initially for it, who probably may have supported exactly the type of suggestion that you have just made, and the people who were working on the Charter Commission, who roamed rather freely through the whole governmental structure. I mean, were they working in a void, or did they not consider what the other people were telling them, or were the other people not saying anything?
Well, I guess that's an essay on how committees work, and sometimes it's not very satisfactory. I saw the process you're talking about, and a lot of the things you say in your question really accurately suggest what the answer ought to be. You had committees of people who were very well-meaning. I think there was a genuine and a sincere effort by either virtually everybody or precisely everybody who was involved on the Charter Commission and on other groups who were involved in this. But what happens is, when you get so many people involved, that is not just the Charter Commission, but this large advisory group that was involved also, and you get consultants involved with various aspects of a possible charter that they themselves are responsible for, I think you get to a position where you get a division of labor, and this committee is responsible for finances, and this committee is responsible for the makeup of the legislative body, and this committee is responsible for whether you're going to have a strong mayor or a weak mayor, strong city manager or what. And the first thing you know, everybody has made a tremendous project out of their little section of the pie.
And nobody is really sitting there sort of with the broad view, seeing where the whole project or control, you know.
Well, I think there are people who saw it, but there were people who figured there was just not a whole lot they could do about it, because they had assigned a group of people, a part of the pie, and that pie, part of the pie, just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and those people thought it was the most important thing in the charter.
Yeah.
And they build it up and build it up and build it up. It's sort of the way bureaucracy operates. The first thing you know, you've got people who are so tied in with what they themselves see as their function that, on a governmental level sometimes, they add staff and they add projects and they ask for additional appropriations, and as soon as those come in, you add staff, you add projects, and the thing just has an inborn ability to pyramid, and I think that's what happened here. We got overcomplicated in the approach, because we had so many people that we assigned jobs to. And I don't know that there was particular lack of communication. I think there probably was pretty good communication. But I don't think anybody really felt they had the ability to say, well, you fellas over there in Article 4, Section 3, who are responsible for that, you've just gone haywire. I'm afraid that sort of a human result of all this was the work of that particular segment was just sort of folded in with everything else, and that just not only added to but multiplied the complexity of the entire operation.
That does seem to be a very difficult sort of thing to control, and it looks like it did sort of get out of hand and really.
Well, our basic mistake was in trying to come up with a perfect charter in conjunction with consolidation. If we had consolidated first and then tried to come up with as close to a perfect charter or an improved charter as we could come up with gradually after you had a consolidated government, I think the effort would have had a good chance of success. But we tried to get all the perfection in at the same time we were trying to merge, and the people didn't understand all those anxieties for perfection, and didn't think the proffered perfection was perfection.
Yeah. I guess that's really, in a way, sort of where I am right now. Everybody that I, the people that I talk to, you know, sounds very much exactly as you have just said. The chamber was very important initiating it, and the Charter Commission was established, and they just sort of went overboard and got way beyond perhaps what the people initiating the action in the first place would like to have seen.
I think that's true, although, you know, the people who initiated may not necessarily have had the best idea, and the people who initiated it may have botched it also. That really was the point I was trying to make at the very beginning, Bill, that even if the chamber had kept control of this thing and had done it within the chamber, for example, I think that would have been unwise, but they might have even done it within the chamber and come out with a bad plan that the people would not have accepted, or it could have been, again, an overly complicated plan. But it is clear that once it got into the structure that it got in, that it was too far-reaching and too complicated, and was just so involved that the typical voter couldn't absorb it. I don't think the average man on the street had any understanding at all of what he had read about the Charter. It just had too many complications in it for him. And I tell you, quite frankly, I bet you could have sat down at that time with a lot of the people who were on either the Charter Commission or that advisory group and have zeroed in on a specific section and really asked tough questions about a specific section, you probably would have had some very satisfactory answers out of some of the individuals directly involved.
Some of the people who opposed have said that very thing. They'd be in a meeting before some club, perhaps debating somebody who was for the Charter and on very technical points, and this may be some junior executive that was loaned more or less as in the United Appeal campaign, and mm-hmm. he might be very much for consolidation, but when it came down to a specific point, he just wasn't very clear exactly what this particular document, what effect it would have on them.
One other thing, in the interest of, I think, historical accuracy for the purpose of what you're doing, I think the electorate here was very concerned about the move from at-large elections to district elections, or the ward system, as it has been called, and that seems to have a bad connotation, and I guess that's one of the things that concerned the electorate. But we've had reasonably good government in Charlotte. In the time I've been here, I've been in Charlotte since 53, and we've had generally honest, capable government, decent sort of people on the city council and the county commission. And I think some people were concerned about what might happen in a ward situation, particularly in a black area or a low-income area where political influences, purely and simply through the purchase of votes, just to put it right on the table, might have some very harsh consequences, that you might have substantial representation on a legislative body that would be composed of individuals who really wouldn't have the good of either their community or their district at heart, but would just be more or less bought politicians, bought by somebody else who could afford to buy them.
That seemed to have been one of the major issues as far as ward politics and talking about unqualified, well, inability to find qualified candidates in all the districts and that sort of argument. That also seems to sort of tie in with the whole sort of school busing controversy, and unwillingness or an unease about having more black representation and whatnot. There seemed to have been, the question was brought up, it suggested anyway, that the whole vote be postponed because of the school busing controversy, all the emotions and the whole agitation over the thing. From the way it turned out anyway, and maybe this is Monday morning quarterbacking, it seems that perhaps that the vote, you know, may have been later, maybe some of this agitation and the racial feeling might have died down.
I really wonder if the school busing question had much of an impact on this thing, Bill. I would be inclined to doubt it. Not that that was a pleasant episode for this community, it was anything but. But I really doubt that the busing situation would have had any impact on the consolidation proposal. Had the consolidation proposal been simple, and had it not involved districts, if you had retained at-large election and kept the number of representatives on the legislative body at about what it was, that is 12, give or take two or three, I really question that the busing situation would have had much to do with it. Again, I'm trying to put that in focus. What was it? When did we first have our busing order here?
The actual decision was, I believe it was 23rd of April of 69, and that was just when the mayor and the when Brookshire and Lowe were appointing the members of the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And then between there and 71 were the various court decisions, and the actual, I guess, must have been the fall there of 70, I guess, was the big...
When was the consolidation vote? What was the date of that?
March of 71. So in order, that was, the school had started with the busing in the fall of 70, and then this was, what, 8 or so months, in other words, almost the end of that first school year under the...
I don't believe the public here would have turned down consolidation per se because of what had gone on with that busing controversy. I may be wrong, and you're probably going to get some opposite opinions on that subject, but I just doubt that seriously.
You think the key thing...
I really think it was inherent in the other things that we've talked about. I think if there hadn't been any... If there'd never been a school busing case here, I think the result would have been virtually the same as we had.
You think it was an impact. The crucial thing then was just the fact that it went so far and made such drastic changes in the whole structure.
Well, I think we would have, let me be more specific. I think we would have had difficulty had we done no more than change the method of representation from at-large to district. I think that would have been a difficult thing to sell in connection with consolidation. Because consolidation itself is one big hurdle. You got to get the voter across that one. Then when you get him across that hurdle and you say, now, Mr. Voter, here's hurdle number two. Instead of being able to vote for all councilmen now, you now are able to vote for 20% of the councilmen, or 25%, including one from your district. That's a second large hurdle. And I think if we had not thrown any hurdle in the path of the voter other than pure consolidation and not injected any other issues into it, we could have passed it. But I think once we got to the point of other issues, and I think the most critical of other issues was the district representation and the large, you know, this legislative body vacillated in size a good bit. It was, I remember some of the discussions back at that time, there were proposals that it be in the 30s, for example, and then it was proposed in the high teens or in the 20s, and it bounced around a good bit. I don't think there was ever a proposal to make it any lower than 12 or 13, but it ranged anywhere from 12 or 13 up to in the 30s. And I think that's the principal thing. And then I think added to it was the fact that as you phrase it, it just went so far and had so many different issues injected into it and so many complications that by the time you told the voter, all right, the first thing you got to do is you're going to consolidate, the second thing you're going to do is change the way you elect your representatives. And now, incidentally, here are 47 other things that are going to happen. He just said, well, I didn't like the first one much, and the second one I didn't like at all, and the next 47, I'm not even going to try to find out what they are.
Maybe it's the tenor of the times and things that have been happening perhaps on the national scene. A lot of people like to look sort of for conspiracies behind things. There are perhaps some circumstances which might indicate that perhaps there were people who saw the sprawling out into the county and they realized that the city was going to have to get a hold of these people one way or another, but it was going to be consolidation, annexation, or whatever. They knew that consolidation was in the background, that some people wanted consolidation. But maybe they figured that if they went to consolidation, they would have to do something about expanding the representation. Maybe they figured, though, that expanding the representation would curtail their influence because there would be more people, and there would be people perhaps from different social class and economic status from what they were. Maybe what they really wanted was annexation, which would, you would still have your 7 city councilmen, and it wouldn't change that influence that much. They said maybe they sort of felt like they had to get that consolidation issue out of the way. Government, the book type, university academic type. Try for this consolidation. Now, we know that if we let them just do it, that they're going to fall flat on their face. And then once they do that, we can just hammer home with the annexation, and we'll have essentially what we want in a limited extent, in that we'll have a lot of these suburbs, but we won't have to go through these changes perhaps in the political equation as far as influence.
Well, that's an interesting thesis. I would doubt if somebody may have thought of that. I doubt if anybody thought of that and acted on it in that way. I don't know that anybody in the early stages of this would have concluded that the Charter Commission was going to get as far ranging as it did get. And if you really wanted to, well, the thesis that you state there, Bill, would really be the thesis of a guy who's on the city council, for example, who would like to stay on the city council and extend his power base, which he figures would be in the affluent suburbs, particularly, and his sources of financial support for campaigns and things of that nature. I would doubt seriously if anybody in that category really was motivated in that direction. Again, I could be wrong, because I don't know everything that's in the minds of all the people who were involved in that particular effort, but it seems to me that there could have been consolidation without the dilution of that individual's power base, because unless they had gone to district representation, presumably he'd be at least as strong as he was before. If you still had at-large elections and he was dependent upon sort of the establishment and the silk stocking districts and things like that for his political base anyhow, he'd have still relatively just as much power, or maybe even more power than he had before. I'd kind of doubt if anybody really went at it that way. And again, I guess the appointment power lay primarily with Brookshire and with Charlie Lowe. And I'd be completely convinced that neither of them would have been motivated by a thesis like that. I think they both genuinely felt that consolidation was a worthwhile goal, And they both genuinely thought that if they had a diversification of interest and representation and input and influence in the Charter Commission, that the final answer would probably come out better. And I guess that both of them probably thought the final answer was pretty good. I don't know whether they thought it was politically acceptable. I'd be interested to know what they now say they thought back then about the political acceptability of the Charter as it eventually came out. But
I guess that in a way is what I'm sort of hunting for, is the question of political acceptability. I mean, sort of theoretically this sounds very good. You're going to more or less have a community meeting. We're going to get all the problems out on the table. We're going to get the university professors and whatnot in here, and we're going to come up with solutions to the community's problems in more or less an ideal form, and it'll modernize and rationalize, and if not cut costs, at least try to keep the costs down a good deal. Now this question of political acceptability, I mean, Mr. Brookshire had won 4 elections as mayor, and Mr. Lowe had been elected every time he ran and had served at least, I guess by this time this was his second term, I guess, because Republicans had been in and out.
Both very popular figures from an election viewpoint.
Yeah.
And still very well regarded.
Just, I'm having trouble sort of, really figuring out how, I mean, it seems like somebody dropped the ball or somebody, not necessarily one person, but I mean, it definitely seems to be a slip there, and I'm just wondering this question, of the political practicality of the thing. It seems to have been, from all I can find out, a very sort of a very idealistic sort of thing, which, politically speaking, just wasn't saleable to the public.
Well, you're exactly right. The ultimate package was just a package that the public was not going to buy. And I think, well, quite frankly, I knew that when the Charter came out. Cliff Cameron, who's a great guy and a good friend of mine, was involved with the effort to pass the referendum, as you know. And I told Cliff very early in the game that I thought consolidation was great. It was a tremendous goal for the community, and we ought to have it, but that we weren't going to get it with this Charter, that the public was just not going to vote for what was in that package. It was just more than they were going to swallow. And I hated to be I told you so about it, but frankly, I was convinced from the beginning that this, once that Charter was in the form that it was going to go to the voters, I was completely convinced it would never pass.
He seemed to have been perhaps having doubts himself. I mean, he didn't exactly jump on the bandwagon right away and lead the charge. He must have had some doubts himself about the...
Well, if he didn't lead the charge initially, I doubt if it was because he had a lack of conviction, but Cliff is a man with a lot of responsibilities and had a lot of responsibilities then in his business career. And although he was heavily involved with the chamber, I imagine they had to do some pretty powerful persuasion to get him to take that campaign on. I'm sure he was reluctant to take it on, not from any lack of conviction in consolidation, but just from the press of other things. It had demands on his time.
Well, I thank you.
Yes, sir. I'll be interested in what your conclusions are.
Well, I'll send
any of this going to be published, Bill? No, I mean, is there a likelihood that your conclusions, I'm not thinking obviously in terms of interviews, but are any of your conclusions likely to see the light of day?
I would hope so. Now, whether, the printers of the books will think so, and the publisher of the book will think so or not, I don't know. I will send you a copy of the interview and...
Oh, don't worry about that. That's a lot of trouble of... Don't feel you have to do that in all seriousness, because it's a lot of trouble to transcribe these things, I know. And if you decide you just want to pick out parts that you're going to make some use of, feel free to do it. And don't worry about having to send me a copy of the transcript. That's an awful lot of trouble for you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Delighted to see you.
I just